So this is just...
Go through your questions.
Okay.
Okay, I have a couple questions. One, have you seen the PA profession evolve from the beginning, and how would you like to see it change in the future?
I was amazed that we've been as successful as we have been. It's a speech impediment. It's English. I'm really surprised how successful the profession has been. When I started, it was 260 to date. It was close to 75, 80,000. It's changed from the concept of skills to an academic degree, which is the natural progression of, I think, any fledgling profession. There's good and bad to that, but I think it's most good than bad. You know, it's the way I look at it. Where I'd like to see us go? I would like to see us become more independent, but yet not totally independent from the physician. I think we ought to be given status equivalent to a resident, which has a quasi-relationship with the supervising or the attending physician. Should we be independent? If nurse practitioners go that way, then I think that's the only true way we can go. But the true terminal degree for a PA is MD or DO. And I don't think we'll ever be there. Back in the 60s, the state of California took all the osteopaths and changed them into MDs. Maybe something like that down the road. There was a white paper written in 1972-73 by the Institute of Medicine that suggested you take the PAs, graduate at the, let's say, master's level, send them out to the to practice for six years, give or take, 4 to 6, bring them back, put them into the medical school system and make them physicians. That's an option. There are some people in my profession who would be entirely adverse to that. Me, I have no problems. Because I think the true terminal degree for a PA is MD.
Okay. When you started at, I don't know how to say the university, Quinnipiac?
When I started what?
In Connecticut,
teaching?
At that university? Yeah. What were you teaching? What was it like? Did you help start that program?
Yeah, I helped start that program.
Okay, so what was that like? Was
basically,
it hard?
Basically, you know, I mean, it's... You have to understand that the people at that time, almost 20 years ago, were in one way, shape, or form prior military. Our program director was not prior military. She was married to a military fella, but who was a counselor, as I remember it. And, you know, it was kind of the Wild West. Start a program, learn by doing. See one, do one, teach one. She was she's now, I think she's past president of PAEA. Very intelligent woman, very gifted woman, very sharp. Her present husband was the first president of the Academy of the American Academy of Physician Assistants. So there was a lot of, you know, experience, intellect to set this program up and running. And she was then, the next person who took over directorship was Cindy Lord, past president of the AAPA 2 years ago. Very gifted, hardest working woman I ever saw, and smart as hell. I mean, just super gifted. She brings new meaning to the term OCD. I mean, she is constantly changing, tweaking this and that. But that's Cindy. I'd love Cindy, but I told her if I was married to her, I'd have to kill her. I just couldn't stand it. And we were yin and yang. And some of my jobs initially were I taught the history of the profession. I was primarily the clinical coordinator, so I went out and set up rotation sites and dealt with the doctors, and I was an intermediary between the student and the preceptors. I also taught in their clinical lab, so that was my primary goal.
Okay. How did you get involved in starting that?
How did I get involved?
Mm-hmm. Because you were in Baltimore right before that, right?
Yeah, I was. I finished a year as a health policy fellow on Capitol Hill, and Dana Sayers Stanhope, who was the woman who started the program, her husband, before he was her husband, said, "Hey, Rick, why don't you get involved with education?" And all PAs teach, whether it's patients, whether it's other PAs. I figured, hey, what the heck? So I had my master's. At that time, only about 3% of the profession had master's. Well, maybe 5. An opportunity came up. I interviewed 4 or 5 different PA programs, got 4 job offers. I interviewed 5, got 4 offers. One was the director of RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, and I really thought long and hard with regards to directorship. I think you have to be a special type of person, and I wasn't that type of person. I'm a good number 2 person, problem solver, placator, politician, that type of thing. And that's my personality lends towards that. So I interviewed these 4 different programs and liked the deal in Connecticut, and I was there for 12 years and retired from there. Okay.
What other programs, including this one, have you been involved in starting?
Well, I was in the first program at George Washington Medical School as a student. I was on the faculty at Essex Community College, but that's, you know, I can't say that I helped start that. This and Quinnipiac were the only two. I came to this kind of lately. I mean, although I've been in it for almost 17 years, I did other. I was in the military. I had a career in the military as a PA. Mm-hmm. So.
How did you make the transition from Quinnipiac to South College?
I was working on my dissertation. I got the early retirement. Wanted to get that done. And Dr. Harbert and I have been friends for 30 years. And he's been trying to talk, come work for him for about, you know, 6 years. I didn't like where his other just things that he said to come down to visit. And this just hit it was equally distant between my 2 eldest daughters, or my 2 daughters, mm-hmm. and no state income tax, nice weather, didn't have to shovel snow. I mean, that's the way I got here, mm-hmm. and it's been pretty good.
How difficult was it for you to transition from being a military PA to a civilian PA?
I had never had a problem.
Never had.
Because I was kind of a civilian in the military.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I played the game, and but it was. I enjoyed the military. I loved the military, but I was very frustrated with regards to the commissioning status for myself. It was time to go. You always hear a military person say, "When it's no longer fun, you go."
You've probably heard some of these questions before, but what fields of medicine have you been involved in? I know primary care.
Primary care and occupational medicine. I was an OR tech, but I enjoyed primary care because it was so vast and interesting. And you never can know it all.
What has been your greatest obstacle that you have had to overcome during your career?
Could you be more specific?
Whether it be specifically PA, whether it be the death of a patient or... dealing with physicians or dealing with patients, what's been your biggest obstacle?
I'll be honest with you, I haven't had many obstacles. Nothing that stands out. I did tell you guys about how to make a decision how to be with a patient when you chose one treatment over another. But that was an obstacle. That was a learning situation. Same thing with dealing with physicians. I have this personal mindset. When I walk into a room, and I don't care who it is, politicians, people with big bucks, millionaires, nobody's better than me. A lot of people just as good, but there's nobody better. And that's my mindset. And My father taught me that. Nobody's better than you. A lot of people just give, but nobody's better. And that's been part of my persona.
You talked about medicine being an apprenticeship or even an entrepreneurship.
Well, what I really convey is that the apprenticeship aspect of it is you learn by doing. You know, there's only so much base knowledge you can get, but you keep on doing it. A physician friend of mine once said, I relieved him on the, I was the first PA on this largest ship in the Coast Guard, which is called the Glacier, which was an icebreaker. And he said, always remember, Rick, that the practice of medicine is practice, practice, practice. Entrepreneurship, I know a few physicians who are entrepreneurs. I love that. I guess it's the idea of taking risk. I take reasonable risk. I always balance my risk with regards to my family and my obligations to my family. But I like doing things differently. I mean, I like taking a calculated, reasonable chance, whatever that entails, personal or... I'm not afraid to challenge myself. So, did that answer your question?
Yes. Yes. What do you mean by taking risks with your family?
I don't take risks with my family. I take risks, and I consider my family.
I'll
talk to my wife and said, well, here are my options. You know, can I do this? Can we do this? Is it the right thing to do? And a lot of decisions, and I've said this many, many times, decisions are neither right or wrong at the time you make them, only in retrospect. But my wife and I have worked out a system that if it's more important to the other partner and it doesn't jeopardize the family, go for it.
You've got a lot of awards and accolades on here, on your resume, like... being a fellow, you were vice president of the Naval Association of Physicians. Yeah. Which one has been the most meaningful?
I think the Naval Association of PAs, because the Coast Guard PAs were kind of out in Never Never Land, and I kind of moved us over to that. Now the PAs are under the Public Health Service, which has a number of PAs in their system. In the old days, you know, as Ben Franklin said, when asked, what do we have? And his response to the lady, the question was, what do we have, a democracy, republic? And he said, a republic, if we can keep it. And the other quote that I think is, when they signed the Declaration of Independence, they talked about we have to hang together or we will hang separately. And it was that kind of mindset, being new, and you have to understand, this is 98% male, the profession. And with males, a lot of testosterone, a lot of ego, and I enjoy that. I enjoy, it's called... it's the truth. I enjoy, seeing how tough I was. And I had a little bit of a... people who told me I couldn't do something, I said, I'll show you. Bastards, I'll show you. And that's what's been a motivating factor in my life in general. I like challenge. I like risk.
Do you think to be in this profession, you kind of have to have a little bit of that attitude?
Oh, yeah. You have to have... it's because sometimes I'm not saying about myself, but sometimes you're going to be smarter than a physician, base knowledge. And you're going to have to stand up on your own 2 feet, and if you have any ethics and morals, and you maybe come to a situation where, hey, see you later, I'm not doing that, or, here's what you have to do. Most physicians, and I over 35 years, most physicians will listen. It's because they know that they don't have all the answers. But they're taught that they have all the answers, and they don't. A buddy of mine who's a physician, an attorney, an engineer, an anesthesiologist said, an MD, a JD, or any degree is not a passport to wisdom. And when you have a choice between wisdom and intellect, take wisdom.
Yeah.
It will keep you out of trouble. So, I sound like an old grandfather. It's like, maybe I am, yeah, what the hell.
Okay, I know that we already asked you this the other day, but what's your take on PA specializing?
I think every PA should be trained as a generalist, just like physicians. And if they want to go on to residencies, they should. Now the question is, not the question, we are a reflection of our physician mentors, models, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, I mean, that's a natural progression. Mm-hmm. I have nothing against more education, leaving the profession, becoming a physician. I have no issues with it. Personally, some of my colleagues in the profession do. I don't. It's what you want. I had a guy who's my age, wants to be a PA. You know what I told him? You're a little crazy, but I'm not going to tell you you can't do it. You want to do it, go do it. What the hell? Who am I to tell you how to, what you can't do? You know? Mm-hmm. And that's just my feeling. I'm not going to tell you anything. You know, I mean, if I think you're going down the wrong road, I'll tell you, hey, you know, look, when you come to crosswalks, you know. But in general, you know, you do what you want to do. This is America. Dun, dun, dun. Sound like a Republican.
That's what I love about you.
What do you think is the most pivotal event, if there was one, in the formation of the PA profession?
Hey, what's pivotal for me may not be pivotal for you. Mm-hmm. So it's such a new profession. A lot of things have changed, which are very positive.
What was most pivotal for you in your kind of whole time as being a PA?
I think one was being selected for the Health Policy Fellow. I know this is going to sound weird, but having a spouse, a wife, who lets you do some really cool things. I mean, I know this is, I mean, and she's not materialistic. I mean, it sounds weird, but just, yeah, it sounds okay, you know. I always would. I know this sounds weird, but I wish
that. No, it doesn't.
I mean, it's very cool. And as I wasn't going to do, I put in for the Health Policy Fellowship and said, the hell with it. She says, oh no, you start it, you finish it. All right. And I have to, you know, the doctor started it, said, the hell with it. No, no. So it's nice. Those are pivotal decisions that you make in your life, and it's great to have support. Mm-hmm. You know, as lousy as a writer I am, but I mean, I'm a good politician. I sell, you know, refrigerators to Eskimos, stuff like that. But that's part of it. That's part of your profession. You sell your knowledge base. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry. Things are, you know.
Absolutely. No. I mean,
that's great.
I want you to expand on that. Your family, I know we talked about it previously, but so your wife has been a huge support. You've got...
Oh, absolutely. She's smarter than me. She, I mean, it's... We both make decisions that are compatible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm very fortunate.
You've got your children. You've got two daughters, two sons.
Two daughters, two boys. So, you know, it takes guys longer to mature.
Was it hard balancing, and we talked about this previously as well, but is it hard balancing a family with this profession? You know, because it seems at times it can be taxing.
It, you know, you realize in medicine and the military, I mean, I was on call when I was 24/7. We moved every 3 years, and it was my wife and I, when we got together, I said, here's two things that have been faithful to me. military to medicine, if this is the lifestyle that you can handle. And she was a great military wife. She put up with it. And, you know, I mean, every time we got transferred, she told me she was pregnant, so I had to retire. I'm serious. But, I mean, I don't know if that was part of it, payback, but that was her.
Okay, you mentioned a lot of areas of interest here, and we talked about a few of them.
Yeah.
But that radio talk show, you said it was called Help Talk with Hillegas,
yeah.
Right? And y'all discussed not only medicine, but...
kind of political, medical-related issues. I had on nurse practitioners, homeopaths, naturopaths, politicians... people who had, you know, I mean, it was an overall encapsulated healthcare. I used to call into Washington to talk to lobbyists, and they would tell us what's going on with the healthcare issues, which was cool. Did that for 2 years, and then I ran for state senate. I had because of the possible conflicts I got out of that. And, you know, it was nice, but I'll tell you, that's I know what prep is. You know, you got to prepare for this. And that was tough. And that got old every Saturday morning, 2 hours. I'm saying, oh, my God. So it was good ego-wise. It was good to get out of it.
So you did it for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about your interest in Latin America.
Yeah, I love it.
Would you like to live there, retire there?
Absolutely. No, I would love to have what they call a estancia and estate.
Yeah.
And I like that.
We all would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chile. And I love Uruguay. I'm in Uruguay in Montevideo. And we went to Punta del Este, East Point. And there was beautiful women with these bikinis type thing. And I said to the guy, guy was showing us around. I said, God, you have beautiful women in Uruguay. He says, oh, no, they're all from Argentina. I have great fond memories of just lovely people, very European, very cool. I love Chile. I went down there and met a priest who was from St. Louis, Missouri, Father Jerry, and he was Pinochet's chaplain when Pinochet was the number two military guy. And so I was introduced to the mayor of the city of Valparaiso, the governor of the state, and a bunch of military guys. And they were just tremendous. I loved it. Beautiful country, beautiful people.
Tell me, expand on, you said a few other areas of interest are pharmaceutical industry, small business, labor relations.
Well, I did some of that stuff when I was on the Hill. What I was supposed to do fell through because of the Clintons were going to fix the healthcare system. And so I ended up being a legislative assistant, just like, you know, regular legislative assistant. And, you know, it was topics I had to deal with, you know, and I just found it interesting. And one crowning glory I started when I was on the Hill was... getting PAs to practice in the State Department. I was instrumental in starting that ball rolling the following year that it finally came to fruition. But, you know, I did that.
This is kind of going back.
That's
a little
okay.
Bit. But what was it like working independently of a physician when you were on, is it the
sure.
Glacier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really... You have a relatively healthy crew, so what you're dealing with is more injuries, upper respiratory, an occasional acute belly, and stuff like that. And
scurvy.
Hmm?
Scurvy.
No.
Just kidding.
We ate very, very well. So it was that kind of thing. It was. You're trained as a PA. A graduate PA is a perpetual resident, so you're making those decisions anyway. And, you know, sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. I just, you know, I can actually say that I did okay, didn't kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What do you value most about this profession?
How so?
How has that changed you in a way that's, I guess, personally, how do you value, when you say, what do you take pride in?
Medicine, in a certain sense, a ministry. So if you do a good job and you're doing, I'll give you an example. There was a book written by Frederick Roldo Demure, who you guys have no idea is. And he was called the Great Imposter. Tony Curtis in the 60s played this imposter. This guy could do anything. He had his genius IQ. He became a lawyer. He became a physician. And, he stole somebody's degree and went in Canada and practiced medicine, was on the ship during the Korean War. And he said that when he went into the town to do mission work, so to speak, to the community in Korea, people would come up and touch him. He made an interesting comment. He said it was like being like Christ in his mind. That's, in other words, he in the book alluded to, I can understand what Christ felt like when people, remember the woman who was hemorrhaging, touched the back of his robe, he turned around and you know, that stuff really resonates with me. You know, whether you're putting a Band-Aid or you're on somebody's knee or you're doing CPR when somebody has a MI, you know, come on, people don't get to do that. And it's really cool. And usually 9 times out of 10 people say thank you. I'm serious. How many people say thank you? Maybe it's just up north. I don't know, but it's not too many people thank you for doing. I mean, a simple thing. You know, and that's, you know. Mm. Philosophical, you guys know that. After a couple of drinks, I'm full of shit. So.
There you guys.
Who do you think is the most influential person in the history of PA?
Well, you got to start with the guys who started. and I'll tell you, to me, I'll give you a half dozen. Victor Mino, who was a friend of mine, and we were in the Coast Guard together, was one of the first 4 PAs. Bill Stanhope, which is the first president of the American Academy of Physician Assistants. Jim Cawley, who is one of the most prolific writers. Rod Hooker. And the guy next door. I know this sounds weird, but these guys have done so much for their profession. A woman, I can give you two names. Well, let me give you one name. Marianne Ramos. Great PA. We used to lobby together. And I'm just trying to think of the other one. I mean, these are people that I have great respect for. Cindy Lord. Oh, God, what the hell's her name? These people just did so much for the profession, and, you know, continue to do so.
This might be a hard question to ask and kind of broad, or to answer, rather. What do you feel like you've contributed to this profession?
I just tried to be a good PA, basically. I mean, you know, it's when you're at the beginning, you just try to perform well, because to be honest with you, your performance or lack thereof reflects upon the entire profession when you're so small.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just felt obligated. I felt so obligated to give back to the profession in some way, shape, or form. He'll tell you basically the same thing. When you start, you know.
Why did you feel obligated?
Let me phrase it this way. When you can live a middle-class lifestyle, you know, I mean, if you really think back, at least in my mind, the opportunity to have a great career in the military, to see the world, to meet wonderful, interesting people. I mean, I've been drinking with the Deputy Prime Minister of Fiji and governors of countries and stuff like this. I mean, come on. And see, you know, go to literally the ends of the earth, the Arctic and the Antarctic. I mean, that's because I was a PA. Going to Berkeley, Uncle Sam, first PA or second PA in that program with my NPH. Come on, you know. I mean, you know, on Capitol Hill, getting my kids educated because I was a PA at an institution where the Bennies were great. I mean, you know, and this was not planned, huh?
The Bennies.
Yeah, and I was there when it was not planned, you know. I met my wife because I was a PA. I interviewed her for a PA program. I mean, you know, it was just. So I, you know,
it provided a lot for you.
In spite, but you know what's really weird? It was never planned. I mean, you know, the opportunities I had as a PA have been phenomenal, and not because I planned it this way. You guys chose to do this. I kind of backed into it. My ex-wife, wife at the time, didn't want me to go to a foreign med school, so I next best. It's a compromise. I'll tell you that's the truth. But it's a good compromise. So, and now that I'm on the downside of my career, you know, I'm sitting back saying, you know, I've done okay in spite of, you know, I always talk, you've seen Animal House. Belushi. I mean, I was Belushi in a certain sense. Not as radical, but, you know, doing stupid things. And but he turned me around. So, I mean, that's basically it.
Well, one more question. What would you leave us, you know, as new PAs? I know we've talked about this previously, but as new PAs, what advice would you give us in starting this and embarking on this new kind of journey, this new profession? For us, new for us.
That's interesting. What would I tell you to do? Remember, you're there for the patient. And everything else kind of flows from that. You know, just take care of your patients as you would a family member. And when you don't know, you don't know. It's the best thing you do is just get them to somebody else. And realize that, you know, medicine is not a true science. There's a lot of art to it. And the art is your ability to communicate with the person and have a sense of people. But you develop that over time, and if you and you know and realize you're not as smart as you think you are. That's all.
Awesome! Thank you
so much. That was really.